Calling all small firm architects. It's time to tap into your full potential with Entree Architects Context and Clarity, where inspiration meets innovation. Hey, it's Mark R. LePage, founder of Entree Architect, and I'm inviting you to join my two favorite co-hosts, Jeff Eccles and Katie Kangas, as they bring together authors, experts, and thought leaders for electric conversations with entrepreneur architects around the globe. It's not just a podcast. It's a community where dreams meet action.
There's a simple equation there. And what for me, what that did, just doing that basic calculation, was it allowed me to compare what I had actually saved in my retirement accounts to what I thought a possible projected annual spend might be.
Artists are temperamental, so beautiful design is going to be a priority. When the job is done, we're going to actually need to live in the house, not live with the person who designed it. And so for me, the artistic skill, the architectural skill is most important. And so I would say like that would be 60% of it, if not more.
Gain insights to build a successful practice. Subscribe, engage, and let's redefine your future together. Join the Context and Clarity community, where every conversation adds to your blueprint for success. Entrepreneur Architect Podcast, episode 33. Welcome to this episode of the Entrepreneur Architect Podcast. My name is Mark R. LePage, and this is the podcast dedicated to a successful life as a small firm architect. My goal is to inspire you to build a better business so that you may pursue your purpose with passion and live the life of your dreams. Residential architecture is very different than any other building type. The scale is different, the materials are different, the details are different, and our clients, well, they are very different. The life of a residential architect is very challenging. The psychology involved in a successful residential architecture project is something that can only be learned after many years in practice. The process from acquiring the project, discovering what our clients really want, through designing, developing, and ultimately working with residential contractors to bring our clients' dreams to reality, is much like giving birth, raising a child, watching her become an adult, and letting her go off out into the world. It's not easy, and every project is like another child, with all the joys and pains of parenthood. And the money we make compared to many of our commercially focused brothers and sisters is often also very different. We are launching small businesses with little knowledge of how to succeed, with little support from those who do. And only after years of trial and error, successes and failures, do we finally learn how to keep food on the table for our families. Well, there's a growing group of residential architects who understand your pain and want to do something about it. Today on the Entrepreneur Architect Podcast, I'm chatting with Rand Selner, a founding member of ARCH, also known as Architects Creating Homes, the only American organization of licensed architects focusing exclusively on residential architecture. As a residential architect myself, I found this conversation very interesting, and I think you're going to like it too. So stay with me. But before we proceed with this week's feature topic, I want to just let you know about this week's blog post article over at entrearchitect.com. 7 reasons why small firm architects should not abandon the AIA. As a proud AIA member, I recognize that many small firm architects are frustrated with the organization, and I too want change, and I continue to work to influence the direction of the profession. But recently, many of my friends, each of them small firm architects, have chosen to leave the AIA and have written about their reasons for doing so. This week's post is my respectful plea to them and to any other small firm architects out there thinking about dropping membership. I think there are many benefits to an AIA membership, even for a small firm architect, and I've listed just a few for you to consider. So if you're interested in my thoughts, I invite you to go to entrearchitect.com/AIA and check it out. And I'd also love to know what you think. What are your thoughts about AIA membership for small firm architects? So when you're finished reading the post, please leave me a comment over at the blog. Rand Seldner, welcome to the Entrepreneur Architect Podcast.
Thanks, Mark. Good to be here.
It is great to have you here. You and I have been bouncing back and forth on the internet and talking a little bit about the things you're doing. So before we get into what you do and how you do it, I'd like to get sort of your origin story, like I do with most of my guests, to get a sense of where you've come from, when you sort of had the idea to become an architect, and tell us a little bit about your story from that point to where you are today.
Well, okay, I'm 63, so that goes back quite a ways.
we have plenty of time.
Okay, well, when I was a young boy, probably, I don't know, 12, 13, my mother thought she sensed some interest in architecture, and there were some homes designed by Frank Lloyd Wright in the city where I grew up, South Bend, Indiana. And so she would pack me up in the family car, and we would drive over there once in a while to different places. And they also took me to a World's Fair, probably before your time, Expo 67.
Yep, that's before me.
Yeah, and that really did it. I was about a sophomore in high school by that time, and I saw Softee's unique living quarters there, and Buckminster Fuller's big sphere, and all these other fantastic things, and that was it. I started taking drafting courses in high school, and almost immediately started designing homes and making models of them. And so I then went to the University of Florida, where I got my bachelor's and master's degree in architecture, and then I subsequently worked for a little while designing hospitals in Fort Wayne, Indiana, with a company there. And then I worked for about 23 years in Orlando, designing all sorts of things. I'm the architect of record on about half of Jurassic Park for Universal Studios. I've done projects for the Orange County Public School System, and restaurants and homes and facilities for the Air Force and restaurants, all kinds of things. But always homes, residential architecture and condominiums seem to be kind of a love of mine, particularly single family homes. And so I gravitated towards that. And during about the last 15 years or so, I decided to relocate to the southern tip of the Blue Ridge Mountains in North Carolina, which is a very scenic area, very mountainous. And I got tired of the heat from Florida. And so I'm what's called a halfback. That's what they call people that go from the Midwest down to Florida and come halfway back. And so here I've fostered my business as a residential architect, and specifically in a niche area called mountain style. And as you know, times were very good from about 2003 through about 2009. And then, of course, the bottom dropped out of everything. And just like almost all architects, we're just trying to survive since that time. But interestingly enough, about 2012, we found some kindred spirits through the AIA, which I was a member of off and on since 1982. And we decided to start a new organization, not a company, but an organization called ARCH, which is what led you and I to talk about those interesting things.
And what year did you start your firm, your residential firm?
Well, I started Seldner Associates Architecture in 1984. And my current company, which is Home Architects, is simply an offshoot from that.
Mm-hmm. And when did you move to North Carolina?
That was around 2000.
Okay. And you do a mountain style. So tell me a little bit about that. What is mountain style?
Well, believe it or not, we actually carry through a lot of the ideas of Frank Lloyd Wright, even though my work doesn't really look much of anything like that. I used to work for one of the main apprentices of Frank Lloyd Wright, a gentleman named Neil Schweitzer, who passed away in Florida many years ago. And it has large open plans. it's sort of like arts and crafts style on steroids. All the bracing and bracketry is very muscular and large. Little posts like 4x4s we would never use. We favor much larger, beefier things. And quite often we might use a slate roof when the budget permits. There's steep roofs, particularly on front elevations, like 12 and 12 pitches. Large glass areas, particularly off the rear, which we normally call the view side. Rock. And sometimes we'll use like an exterior chair rail out of a oversized historic timber that might be a 3x12 out of a barn, and have maybe some kind of siding underneath that or rock, and then above that maybe go to a random board and batten. And how we handle window grids and so forth is also kind of unique, and have transoms and just a lot of detail involved too. And it's remarkable that when you do things in the mountains, there's a lot of structure involved, because you need to do things. There's a term called pinning to the rock, for instance, for your foundations. And if you come from Florida, you don't know about that, that could really be a disaster. So I learned about those things from structural engineers. And because when you're building on the side of a mountain, you need to make sure that everything's stable. And so you gradually learn those things and become efficient at it.
Yeah, it sounds like a really fun style to design.
It really is. I used to actually do very contemporary, even futuristic projects, particularly commercially, and tried to do some of that for homes. But you know what? Very few people, very few clients seem to want that. My wife, Mary, like Merry Christmas, she is a real estate broker around here, and she can't sell them when she gets them. She can sell mine.
Yeah.
For a profit, but there's another architect around here. I like his work very much. He's very contemporary, and it just doesn't sell.
Yeah, it's just not what they're looking for.
No, because it's kind of like, like I said, I worked on Jurassic Park. This is like a mountain theme park. And so when well-to-do people from Atlanta come up here to buy homes, they really are not looking for things that they might find down there. Yeah. In an urban environment, it's kind of like a big mountain theme park. And so, if you'd like to be able to earn a living and survive, you might want to be thinking about doing that.
Right. You give the market what they're looking for.
Right.
Yeah. So arch fascinates me. Tell me a little bit about what it is, and then we'll get into, sort of where it came from and all that.
Well, okay, first, why don't we identify what ARCH is? ARCH is an American organization of licensed architects focusing on residential architecture, professional excellence and achievement, client value and service. It's essentially similar to the AIA in that it is like a professional organization, a professional club, if you will, specifically focused on the needs and issues facing licensed architects that design homes. So that's what it is.
So no home designers and no non-licensed architects.
Well, that's correct. And we prefer to dwell more on who it is and who it's for rather than who it's not for.
Sure. Yep. I just wanted to clarify that.
Yes, sir.
And it's just so people know, it's spelled capital A, lowercase r, capital C, capital H.
That's right.
And it's pronounced arch.
Yeah. And if you type in your computer, ARCH colon architects creating homes, you'll find us at the top of Google.
Yeah. And so what's the history there? How did it happen, and why did it happen?
Well, every single member that's in ARCH right now has been or continues to be a member of the American Institute of Architects. We by no means exclude anyone from the participating in whatever organizations work for them. We encourage people to belong to groups that feed them. And by feed them, we mean actually help put food on the table, and that feeds them intellectually and helps address the issues that are of concern to them. All of us have been active in the IAA for decades, me since 1982. And it's timely that you had your recent post from yesterday evening on your website, to which I responded. We're not saying, hey, if you're in the AIA, you can't be an arts. That's not the case at all. And when I left the AIA, I said to Dave and some of the other people there, I said, look, you know, the AIA is a very worthwhile organization, does very good things. I just think that we need to have a focus now that is focused strictly on licensed architects who design homes. Because, as I'm sure all your audience members know, if they don't know, the AIA has many members that are not licensed. And we believe that there's a primary focus that licensed architects have that design homes. There's a unique market there. We're in competition with a lot of unlicensed people. And so we prefer to focus on just the issues that are relevant to what our members have as their main concerns.
Right. So this is purely an organization to help residential architects, licensed architects, and certainly not an anti-AIA.
Exactly. And I'm glad that you said that. That's exactly what we're trying to do. We're trying to keep everything positive and focus on what we want to have happen and what we've accomplished and what we're growing and trying to do. There's many things we think give people an advantage to being an ARCH member, and at some point I'd love to address some of those whenever you're ready.
Sure, let's get into that. You know, just to clarify my the post that I wrote, the article that I wrote is why small firm architects should not abandon the AIA. And for anyone listening to this in the future, this is May. I think it was posted May 26th, that 2014, that article, and that's what Rand was referring to. It's my take on why small firm architects should not be abandoning AIA. And what Rand is doing is something that's very interesting to me, because I think there is a need for what ARCH is proposing to serve the small firm residential architect. That, you know, the AIA, it's a very large organization and it can't do everything. And to have a smaller organization that its only mission is to help residential licensed architects is a great idea.
Well, thanks. I appreciate that attitude, and we look forward to you becoming a member at some point.
Yeah, I'm seriously considering it. I want to look into it a little bit more, and that's one of the reasons why I invited you onto the podcast. I wanted to share what you're doing with my audience, but I also wanted to kind of a little selfishly learn a little bit more about it, and while doing it, share it with our listeners.
Well, you're in a unique position to do that. And thank you for having us here. I hope a lot of people, a lot of architects are listening, because we've been wondering amongst ourselves, amongst our members. We have an executive committee. We Skype every Wednesday at 8:30 p.m. each other and talk about things. We say, hey, it's probably time we started to try to grow our membership some. And we say, well, okay, now how exactly are we going to reach, you know, hundreds or thousands of other architects? And then here you come. this is very fortuitous.
That's my mission. You know, we want to get everybody who's out there, all small firm architects, to sort of help one another, whether you're a residential architect or not, to be out there and work with each other to support one another and to help each other grow.
Well, you've really embraced what part of our, one of our advantages that we talk about. It's actually our point number 11, interpersonal caring members to help ARCH members, where you're like a brother to other architects, and we encourage that to be like a brother or a sister to other fellow architects that design homes, because we really need help. Unless we happen to know everything, and I don't think any of us do. And having somebody there to help deal with issues in our businesses and lives can really help. And that's part of the background of Arch, and part of what we offer, I think, our members that not necessarily every other organization provides.
Just two quick questions, and then let's get into the benefits of what Arch can provide. What year did it start?
2012 is when we founded the organization, and in 2013, we legally turned it into what's called an LLC, a limited liability company, although it really is a professional organization, and we did that within the state of North Carolina, although it is a national organization. And because it uses the word architects in it, we actually had to get permission to form the organization from the Board of Architecture in the state of North Carolina. And fortunately, they allowed that to happen. So we are an LLC. We discussed going not-for-profit, but there were some issues involving that that we didn't want to embrace immediately. And however, we may end up doing that at some point. A lot of people don't realize that AIA is not a not-for-profit entity. It is a, what is it? I'm sure everybody there that's on their executive committee is screaming at the radio right now. but it's not that.
It is. I mean, it's a corporation.
No, it's not. It's a non-governmental organization. I think that's the
NGO. Yeah.
That's the technical definition of what they do. And we may end up doing that at some point. I'm not sure. But we are very careful with our resources. We do have resources. We do have an income. We have dues. And I'd like to point out that's actually one of the benefits. 100% of the dues that we take in is used to support the mission of licensed residential architects in the organization. Doesn't go to some big parent organization that has other interests that are like commercial architecture or whatever going on. It's strictly focused on licensed residential architecture. So all the money that people pay into it, I say all the money, that's pretty funny. Our yearly dues are only $150. So, that's, I think, a great value.
And how many members do you have currently? It's relatively new, so.
Well, Arch projects having 100 members during next year. We currently have members from Colorado through Eastern North Carolina, or from Chicago down through Fort Lauderdale. We presently have about a dozen members. Mm-hmm. We only recently decided to begin building membership publicly. We've been establishing our legal business forum, recently resolved our bylaws, established the Arch website, which is, you can just type in architects creating homes, and we should be number one. We refined the mission statements, the code of conduct, and other administrative matters on which to build a solid organization. We ultimately foresee thousands of members across the USA as membership grows. Let's face it, more architects design homes than any other type of architectural practice. Eventually, those professionals will become aware of Arch's presence and the fact that Arch is the only peer organization representing their interests and issues.
Yeah, let's get into what you do. I also, while we talk about what you do, maybe we can also address CORA, the Congress of Residential Architects, and CRAN, the Custom Residential Architect Network, which is CORA is an independent group, and CRAN is a smaller group of the AIA. What makes you different than those? Let's start there.
Well, nearly all of Arch's members continue to be AIA members, or were AIA members. Arch is not intended as an either-or type of organization. We all join organizations for different reasons, and as I mentioned before, we recommend that you join what feeds you, puts food on your table professionally and intellectually, and members are welcome to be part of whatever organizations they feel comfortable joining. That being said, we believe that Arch has some distinct advantages. Arch is the only organization composed of licensed architects who focus on residential architecture. Those other organizations have unlicensed members in them, and they have agendas that vary from that of licensed architects. We believe that it is better to focus on the issues of licensed architects, which are unique. And let's talk about value. Our dues is less than 1/4 of some of those other organizations, only, like I mentioned, $150 a year. And we believe you get a lot more for your money. And as I mentioned, the use of dues, a big difference there between organizations. You know, when you pay your dues in some of those other entities, you don't know where it's going. The use of our dues, 100%, is spent on improving residential architecture and helping residential architecture. To our knowledge, we're the only professional organization whose dues are spent totally on the issues of licensed residential architects, not on commercial architecture, large administrative staffs, lobbying, or other activities. And we do have income sources. Resources, we talked about that, professional brothers and sisters, and there's a whole lot of other advantages, but that's some of the main differences right there.
Yeah. So let's say I join, and what are the top five benefits that I'm going to receive by joining Arch?
Well, number one, we have a Find an Architect database to help the public find Arch members. When an architect joins Arch, they receive their own Arch webpage on which they may include many of their projects and text to describe their practice and one link back to their company website. We know of no other organization that provides us marketing assistance as part of basic membership dues. And there is an Arch Find an Architect database on the Arch website, which the public can search to find Arch member companies by specialty and or geographic location. Some members join for this exposure alone, so that's one. Another is the opportunity to have one or more of the Arch member projects featured on the Arch homepage slideshow. In addition to the previous item I mentioned, when an architect joins Arch, they have the ability to have at least one of their best projects featured on the main Arch website slideshow that appears at the top of every Arch webpage, giving Arch members tremendous exposure. Third, you can improve residential architecture in your practice. Be part of the only independent professional organization composed of 100% licensed architects working with Arch members to improve our situation in America and to improve the practice of residential architecture. Just a few of the issues Arch focus groups are addressing include construction document numbered notation systems, residential specifications, environmentally responsive design techniques, improved insulation in houses, healthier home materials and systems. Oh, where do you hear this? Certified residential architect, focus team system, the CRAFTS program, which is newly adopted and in progress, and also in progress, Arch Design Awards program, quarterly Arch e-magazine, which is in progress, and a whole lot more.
So certification, let's go back to that. What is that, the CRAFTS program? What is that, and how does that work?
The CRAFTS program is we call the Certified Residential Architect Focus Team System, CRAFTS, capital C-R-A, and then small F-T-S. That is a new system under development, and we've not yet rolled it out. But what we're attempting to do there, we had a lot of debate. It was a very heated debate about it amongst our XCOM, the executive committee. A lot of people said, "Oh, hey, you know, the AIA's talked about this. Evidently, there was some AIA group that wanted to start a medical specialty group and so forth," which actually I don't really see a problem with. But you know what? There's more architects designing homes than any other type of architecture being practiced in America today. And, you know, guess what? If you're designing 7-Elevens and car dealerships and Kroger supermarkets, you are not going to know as much as somebody that focuses on the design of homes. Does that make sense?
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay. I mean, there, as a matter of fact, the AIA itself, the Canadian group of architects, many state agencies, they all have defined the design of homes as one of the absolutely most complex things that an architect can undertake. It is more happening. I mean, I used to design Veterans Administration medical centers. I know what I'm talking about. I've been doing this a very long time. And there's more happening per square foot in a house than in any other type of project. And so the fact that it requires some special knowledge and some special education shouldn't be anything to be viewed with anything other than a welcoming, because it's knowledge that we need to know so that we don't have problems. And, you know, some of the members that we have in Arch have been doing this for over 40 years. And so our intention is to loosely base it on the old CSI system, one through Division 17 rather than Division 16, and have there be a series of educational modules that have questions. The first one, we ask everybody what you wanted to have the first one on, and some people thought flashings. So we're in Division 7, thermal and moisture protection. And so we're working on an educational module that would be delivered through our website when you pay to go through the certification program, and you would take these just like a CEU, very similar to that. And then there'd be these questions that would appear after you study the material, and you answer the questions, and you know, you need to pass 70% to obtain certification after you pass all the sections. And like I said, it's still under development, but that's the big idea. Does that make any sense to you?
Yeah, yeah. It's very interesting. So it's basically, it's not a license, but it's a certification to show potential clients that you're a certified residential architect, that you have gone through a rigorous certification process and have passed that test.
That's right. And we're, you know, no professional organization is in any position to license anything. That's something that only the states can do, to my knowledge.
Right, correct.
And so we're not trying to step on any state's toes at all. What we're trying to do is say, look, if somebody in the public wants to obtain somebody to design a house, and you know, we're already up against it, in case your audience doesn't know it. There's already so-called certification programs for unlicensed people. And the only way we can do anything to one up on that is to say, well, okay, you know what? You can't be a certified residential architect unless you are an architect and you have to be licensed. Right. So the way you combat that is to say, okay, here's some specialized knowledge. And so if you've gone through the program, you can put that after your name, that's CRAFTS. And then the public can start understanding that, oh, I need to look for somebody that's got that after their name to get the best possible design for my home. Because in case some of your audience hasn't noticed, we have had a tremendous erosion of our industry. I think even the AIA said that about 6 years ago, I think there was like 220,000 architects. And I believe about a year ago, they said there was about 180,000. What do you suppose happened to all those guys and gals?
Yeah, they went on to do other things.
Well, you know, if they're still with us, you know, and so it's a very sad state of affairs. If anybody doesn't think there's an erosion in our profession, just look at those statistics. And so what we're trying to do in Arch is trying to put up a seawall to bolster the position of licensed architects that design homes, and also to serve as an educational organization to help provide the knowledge that many of our members have, but that can share with other members, so we get a good, well-rounded certification effort there. And I think that's a real exciting program, and we're really looking forward to rolling that out. It may take us a year or more to finally get that in position. We're working with our website people to develop the online questioning. But it looks like it's a very easy to achieve program.
So do you have thoughts on how you're going to fund Arch? Because, well, you know, in order to gain the traction that you need and to grow it into the size of the organization that you really would want it to be effective, you're going to need some money.
Well, yeah, and that's a good question. We already have an income stream from our dues, from our current membership, and new members, of course, add to that every year. And once again, we believe it's a tremendous value. It's only one-fourth of what some other organizations are. And so that's one income stream. We also have what we call Arch forms, agreement forms available that are still being developed and should be rolled out pretty soon, such as contract forms, owner-architect contract forms, that we call agreement forms. And we do that with a proviso, as I mentioned on your website today, in response to who is the gentleman's name? Wojo. That we, just like the AIA, we would encourage anybody that takes an agreement form not to just use it verbatim, but to in fact review it with your own counsel. That's always prudent. So, but we have forms that have been created over decades with the input of attorneys that specifically address the practice of designing homes by licensed architects. And that has been sorely missing in the world. And so we've got that, and that alone is something that I think any person that designed homes would want to have. And that will be available soon. And so that will provide some more income there. We intend to start producing a yearly Arch Awards program called ArchDES, means Arch Design Excellence Selection Program. And there'll be some kind of a nominal registration fee for that. And we believe that residential architecture has been sorely lacking for some meaningful awards programs. Instead of just awarding flat roofed white boxes, which I actually enjoy, I've designed a whole bunch of those myself in the past, but there's a whole genre of residential architecture, many genres of residential architecture that have been not represented. And so we intend for there to be probably at least 10 different categories. And so that'll provide hopefully some more income there, and also some much needed recognition to some extremely talented residential architects. So that's some of them.
Yeah, I'd love to see a residential architecture design awards program that is not only focused on contemporary architecture, which I love. I love the architecture that is focused on those. But it, you know, we don't do a lot of that, and we do some pretty nice architecture in our minds, and we'd love to submit that to some awards programs.
You know what's really an eye-opening experience? Have you ever been to Oak Park in Chicago?
No. Oh yes, I have. It's funny that I say no. Yeah, I was just there in December in the freezing cold.
Did you tour the Frank Lloyd Wright homes?
I did. Yeah. Oh, I only toured the actual design studio.
Well,
home and studio.
They only will have those homes available once a year, and I forget what time of year that is. They do that, but he's got a whole lot of his flat roof designs, which are very nice. But you look off to the side, and there's this one really big home with this 12 and 12 pitched roof and this big giant fireplace. And you say, wow, who did that? And you look at the plaque, it's Frank.
Yeah.
And not many people realize he used to do that.
Right. That's what he started with.
And I noticed when I looked at that, how similar I thought it looked to some of what I'm doing right now. So you can have the same kind of spatial perceptions, but have a sloping roof too. And that seems to be what more clients want. So I don't really see any harm in doing that and bestowing some awards where merit is worthy.
Yeah. Our clients really like traditional architecture, but they sort of, I think, secretly desire contemporary architecture, but they're afraid to go all in on the contemporary architecture. So many of them ask for both. You know, they want traditional architecture that sort of has that modern cutting edge to it, and that's what we try to provide. And it's a lot of fun to design that way.
Well, it is, and I think a lot of it has to do with how you conceive things spatially. And you can have a very modern space and a very modern house intellectually, but it can have sloping roofs and stone and board and batten and other elements that people might assume is more cloaked in traditional clothing. But it's still a very contemporary house intellectually and how you live in it.
Yeah. The residential designers, I want to kind of shift gears a little bit. Many of my readers and many of my listeners something that comes back to me over and over and over again are is how residential designers are sort of stepping on the toes of residential architects. And in my mind, you know, everybody has, you know, their place in the market. And my answer to that is to be better. That's, I've written articles about it, and I think we just need to be better than those residential designers, and then we claim our market. But I think to have an organization that supports residential architects and then differentiates us from designers, you know, in a very positive way, I think is a very helpful thing.
Well, that's the whole plan. Ours is not, our Arch's mission is not really to say anything negative about other entities. It's to focus on what's good about what we all do and to promote that.
Yeah. Well, I think you're doing a very worthy service to the profession. So I thank you.
Well, thank you.
Is there anything else you want to share about Arch? Or did we cover it all?
Truth, justice, and the Arch way. Arch stands for what is good in house design. Be part of the professional organization that is leading the way in improving residential architecture today.
So how can, if an architect wants to get involved, how do they do that?
Well, get on the Arch website. There's a membership page, and you can click on that and find out how to apply. It's very simple. Your email is your application. We just ask for certain brief pieces of information, like your license number and the state of licensure. And we do ask that you agree to participate in at least two different focus groups, so that your membership will mean something. And finding the Arch website is the most important thing. If anybody anywhere on the planet right now just types in "architects creating homes" in their Google browser, we will pop up number one in the world.
Okay. Well, there you go. Search for "architects creating homes" and you'll find Arch.
That's it.
Thanks, Rand. Thank you very much for being with me today. Very interesting conversation.
My pleasure. Thank you, Mark.
All right. Good luck. Thanks.
Thanks. Bye. Bye.
I'd love to know your thoughts on this one. Is there a need for an organization dedicated exclusively to licensed architects serving residential clients? Residential architects out there, I want to know what you think. If you're interested in learning more about Arch, including information on how to become a member, or if you just want to contribute to the conversation, go to entrearchitect.com/episode33 and leave me a comment. Let me know what you think. Before I wrap up, if you haven't signed up for the Entree Architect Academy mailing list yet, there's still time. The first session will only be offered to members of the Academy mailing list, and space for the Academy will be limited. So if you want to be notified with details of the first session of Entree Architect Academy, go to entrearchitect.com/courses, sign up, join the list, and you'll be notified to have an opportunity to enroll in session number one, coming soon. Also, I want to remind you, as I do every week, to leave a review or a rating at iTunes, entrearchitect.com/iTunes. Tattoo that on your forehead and check it out in the mirror. entrearchitect.com/iTunes sends you to my iTunes page on the web. Just click that button that's labeled View in iTunes, and it will open up your iTunes app where you can leave a review for the show. I'd love to know what you think, so please go over there and do that right now. I do appreciate that, because that gets us noticed by other architects, and that's the mission here at Entrepreneur Architect on the podcast, is to get as many architects listening to what we're talking about here so we can make some change. So that's a wrap. My name is Mark R. LePage, and I am an entrepreneur architect. Thank you very much for listening.
From historic homes to modern architecture, brick is one of the most popular building materials around the world.
How to allow the house to bridge the gap between the history of the site, the approachability of this kind of architecture in this kind of neighborhood, and the sort of nostalgia of materiality for the client's past, right? And brick really started to provide an answer for that.
Hi, I'm Doug Pat, and this is Design Vault. There aren't many materials that easily blend with any style and context, but brick does just that. I've seen some extraordinary work with brick, so when Glengarry approached me about hosting this podcast, I couldn't say no.
Typically, Tudor-style houses from outside are just stunningly gorgeous piece of structure. And when you go in, it's just sad.
Yeah.
Dark. And that is not going to happen with my approach to design.
I speak with industry leaders and share inspiring stories behind their work and ingenious design.
You'll see brick that's fashioned into basket weave patterns, sawtooth patterns, what's known in England as diapering.
Doesn't sound like you knew them per se, right? They found you through relationships that you had with other.
Well, wait, Doug, there's more.
Okay.
We'll go behind the scenes to understand process and even the inspiration that sparked the design.
You know, I think we were inspired by all the factory buildings in Dumbo. I mean, that is the kind of period of significance, that early American factory building.
Design Vault by Glengarry. Visit glengarry.com/design-vault or search for Design Vault wherever you get your podcasts and subscribe now to stretch your imagination.
Attention architects and creative minds, get ready to supercharge your brand with Build Your Brand, the podcast that's unlocking the secrets of branding success for creatives. Hey there, it's Mark Arlepage, founder of Entree Architect, and I'm inviting you to join my friend, architect marketing expert, Jeff Eccles at Build Your Brand podcast, where he explores the captivating stories of the world's top brands and transforms their lessons into powerful moves for small firm architects and creatives like you. In season one, Jeff shares the thrilling tale of Southwest Airlines, where he dissects their journey to the summit and distills it into strategies tailor-made for you.
It's important to keep in mind that companies like Southwest compete in the real world, just like you, and face real-world challenges, just like you. You might be surprised at how similar those challenges are to the struggles that you grapple with on a day-to-day basis.
Don't miss out on your blueprint for success. Subscribe, tune in, and let's build your brand together.
You may have noticed that the very best brands in the world are also known for having somewhat unique corporate cultures. That's often the glue that holds everything together when they encounter those rough spots.
We don't do it because it inconveniences the passengers to whom we are primarily dedicated, the short-haul frequent flyer.
Follow the link in the show notes to subscribe to Build Your Brand today. Remember, no matter the size, the journey's the same. Your brand's journey to the top starts here.